It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. We are Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM80, all of our great ESPN stations across the country, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Parlay hit last night. Let's go. Appreciate them Clippers coming through with them beers, man.
It's actually, you know what? We got to give you even more credit if you get anything right. Not you just, CC, but you, anyone out there on the NBA. I've given up trying to figure it out.
Really?
Last night was one of those nights in the NBA where you're just like, why? Why even try to? Do you realize? Okay, let's just go through this very quickly here. The Washington Wizards lose again last night. They've lost 16 in a row. Mm-hmm. Here's what people don't know. They have a worse record than the Pistons, who had a 28-game losing streak this year. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, remember yesterday we talked about the Cavaliers, this unbelievable win against the Celtics, 22 points down in the fourth quarter? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost to the Hawks. Mm. Okay? Sixers, who beat the Mavs the other day, yeah, they lost to the Grizzlies. The Warriors, who lost by 52 to the Celtics, their next game last night against the Bucks, who we sat here with Austin Rivers yesterday talking about, hey, the Bucks are coming back. Warriors won by 35. And your Lakers, coming off of a good win a couple of days ago right against the Thunder.
You knew it wouldn't last.
Well, they lose to the Kings.
You knew it wouldn't last.
I give up.
You knew it wouldn't last. Remember everybody was trying to big up D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah.
10 points, minus 10 in 35 minutes played. Guys, you can set your watch to it. This is one of the most inconsistent teams in the NBA. And the part that makes it the worst is that they don't defend. And when they find themselves in a hole, they ask LeBron James in his age 39 season to dig them out of it. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely incredible just how this team is so up and down. It feels like a roller coaster ride being a Lakers fan watching them through the regular season. At least this time last year, there was some consistency. There was an identity forming around AD, and it started on the defensive end. They don't play no defense last night. The Kings got any shot they wanted.
44 for De'Aaron Fox, I think.
44, career high for De'Aaron Fox. But here's the thing. I mean, listen, the last 7.5 minutes of the first half, they were 13 or 14 from the field. They closed the half on a 32-9 run. And that's after 10 straight points to end the first quarter. Like, you can't make it up.
Kings aren't good enough for the Lakers to be good against them.
I'm not even trying to have the fake outrage as a Lakers fan. You just can't make it up. Like, this is a team that, for whatever reason, believes that they can rest on their laurels and ask LeBron James to bail them out. And LeBron is supposed to come through every single time. And I'm sorry, he's just not capable of doing that. And that's why I said it a couple of weeks ago that the Lakers can't win a championship asking LeBron James to be the best player on the court every single night. It can't. Now, there will be some nights where he can dial it up, and that's why I'll never dismiss the Lakers when it comes to a play-in scenario, no matter who they match up with.
Right.
But if you're asking LeBron James to do it over the course of, you know, the regular season, if you're asking him to do it over the course of a long series in the postseason, I just don't think he's capable of that anymore. And that's the part that's so alarming, because here's the thing. Based on what's on paper, the supporting cast, the pieces that they have, they should be able to go on a deep playoff run. They have the requisite experience. The same core players was in the conference finals a year ago. Mm-hmm. And they lost to the reigning defending champs. Like, they have the ingredients. I'm not sure that this team has the mentality, and that's the part that is absolutely maddening.
Yeah, the mentality part is awful. But to your point about them leaning on LeBron, we're seeing the wear and tear of a player of his age. Like, you can pour $1 million into your body, but Father Time is undefeated. At some point, you're going to have to realize that it has to be someone other than LeBron James that you have to rely on consistently to carry the load. You know, he's dealing with the ankle still. Like, the more that they try to push him to consistently be that guy, I think it's going to shoot them in the foot down the road, because you know, you keep putting that wear and tear on him, and at some point it's not going to pay dividends. At some point, time is going to be up for him.
And to your point on LeBron and the ankle, he did leave the game with about 3+ minutes to go last night. Now, it was not close, so maybe he wouldn't have if it was close and he would have fought through it, but it's always going to be a lingering thing considering he is 39 years old, what, 21 years into his NBA career.
Like, and he had already done enough last night. 31, 13, and 5. What more do you want LeBron James to do under those circumstances?
That's good.
Like, I mean, I'm just saying, the other big three, Anthony Davis, his stat line, 14 and 11. It's a ho-hum night for him. D'Angelo Russell, like I said, 10 points, minus 10, and 35 and a half minutes played. Like, it's just not good enough. Those guys have got to step up. That's supposed to be the big three of the Lakers. They've got to step up. They've got to be better. And they just weren't. And in this situation, the second unit couldn't come in and bail them out like they did the game before. That was the thing. Spencer Dinwiddie came in. He was the catalyst 2 games ago. And the second unit was able to overcome the early deficit that the starters for the Lakers put the team in. That didn't happen last night. Again, when you were relying on the second unit or you're relying on LeBron James to bail you out of the apathy that puts you in a hole early on in the games, that's not sustainable. That's not what championship caliber clubs do.
Also, you talk about Anthony Davis on the offensive end. Give Sabonis' numbers if you could.
Oh, triple-double? Mr. Triple-double? You want to give Sabonis' numbers? 16, 20, and 12.
That's the other big.
16, 20, and 12.
Yeah, and I know, it's just because you're bigs doesn't mean you're matched up on every play and everything like that. Like, it's not the old days in the NBA. But that is, theoretically, the guy you're going up against is doing that.
But here's the thing. 13 second chance point. Here's the part that's alarming for me as a Lakers fan. The Kings had 76 points last night in the paint.
Well, they don't.
They had 76 points.
When you guys won the title a couple of years ago, what happened? You had Dwight Howard, who people can make fun of Dwight Howard all they want. He's going to the Hall of Fame, and he's a big physical presence. You had JaVale McGee. You had guys that played bigger and stronger than AD to slide AD down. Now, in the small ball era, they're probably doing the right thing by playing AD at 5 and starting Rui Hachimura with LeBron and playing more wings, but they all know that's not when they're at their best. But I'm telling you, with this team, this is why this team is weird. It's almost as if the Kings aren't good enough for them to get up for that game. Like, if they were playing the Nuggets last night,
it's different.
I think it's different.
It's different, but it's not a light switch, though, Evan.
I know, that's the problem.
Not.
But
when
that's
you're
the
trying
problem.
To win a championship, it's not a light switch. It's a mentality, and you got to bring that every single time. And the part that is so alarming is that this time last year, the Lakers had the urgency they needed to have. Now, maybe it's because LeBron James wasn't in the lineup. Remember, LeBron James was dealing with that injury?
Yeah, they had no choice.
They had no choice. They had no margin for error. But I guess the presence of LeBron makes you feel like, oh, it's okay. It doesn't matter that we're going to be in a play-in because LeBron is the best player in the world on any given night. He'll dial it up. We'll be fine.
He'll figure it
They're
out.
They're resting on those laurels, and I just don't think that that's a place that they need to live, especially when you see how competitive the Western Conference is. I mean – last night, it felt like I was watching a two-man game of De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis on a loop.
Because you
were. It was like pick and roll. Everything. Pick and roll, pick and roll. And here's the thing. When the Lakers seemingly figured out the pick and roll, guess what? Malik Monk is a flamethrower from the outside.
Former Laker.
Yeah, and Davion Mitchell. Who knew? Davion Mitchell absolutely was buckets in the second. Like, I'm just talking about the second quarter. This dude couldn't miss. No, quite
and
literally.
And he's a defensive player.
Actually, quite literally, he didn't miss. He was 4-for-4 from three-point land. Like, those are the things that drive me crazy as a Lakers fan. When I'm watching these games, you know they have the talent to be better. You know they have the ability to be more locked in on the defensive end, and they're just not. They're not a good defensive team. And if they're not a good defensive team, then what are they? Mm-hmm. They've never been a great perimeter shooting team. You know, so it's not like you're going to be able to shoot your way out of holes all the time, shoot your way out of deficits in games. So what are you? You're a team that's overly reliant on a player that's in his age 39 season in the NBA.
The other big game last night, Smalls, that we look at, the Warriors and the Bucks. So, again, you don't understand this stuff. You lose by 52, then you win by 35. But last night is why, and that's the Warriors, by the way. Smalls, last night is why I'm still not giving up on the Warriors. And you've destroyed me for not being able to say goodbye to things in life. Like, okay, it's over, like, move on, whatever. And you're fair to do that, right? I just, when the Warriors have their full team, I'm not ready to say goodbye. And last night they had their team.
I'm kind of with you, though, on this one specifically. Like, with Bill Belichick and the Patriots, I disagree wholeheartedly, Evan. I think that it was time to say goodbye. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you at 6:09 a.m. Eastern time, bringing up Bill Belichick and the Patriots' divorce. He may never coach again, Evan.
Focus on what the matter at hand here,
I'm just kidding. However, after a full season of me doubting Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs and saying, I think this is not their year, we're seeing signs that there's erosion on this team and certain things even the greats can't overcome, and then they go on this unbelievable playoff run and they win the Super Bowl yet again, I am a little reluctant to write off the Golden State Warriors. I feel as if they're a team that if they just punch their ticket and get in, they have that championship DNA. They're a team that can dial it up at the right time. And we saw it last night against the quality opponent.
I totally agree with you. I know, CC, you're not on board with that. CC has written off the two teams that everybody wants to see go far, which would be the Warriors and Lakers,
yes,
from entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
But Warriors last night with a good win. Bucks need Chris Middleton back. And, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to Tim Legler with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter, and Legs brought up an interesting point. He said it's not that the Bucks aren't playing better since the break. It's look who they're playing against, mm-hmm, since the break. And then they play a much better team last night, obviously, in Golden State than what they've played against. Not that Golden State is great, but they're not far away now. Like, if Miami beats Dallas tonight, a game you'll hear George Sedano play-by-play tonight on ESPN Radio, that I believe Golden State jumps up to the eighth spot. And the reason that that's important is you get two chances to get into the playoffs, yep, if you're 7 or 8 versus 1, if you're 9 versus 10, which is obviously would be the Lakers versus the Warriors. By the way, there is one other thing I need to address.
What's up?
To own something.
Oh.
So when I came in here this morning, it was insanely hot in here. I did make it lower. I did make the AC a little bit lower.
That's
Smalls
fine.
Gets very mad at us when we do this.
No, that's okay.
It was 72. I made it 70.
Yeah,
oh, dear.
It's a little toasty in here.
Thank
it's
you.
A little warm in here.
Yeah.
70 is a good compromise.
70 is the lowest we can go?
No. I think 69 is the lowest we can go.
69, 60.
Hey, phrasing!
What?
Can we get to 68?
Are we
at an auction?
You're pushing it.
68, anybody? 68,
you're pushing it.
Okay.
All right.
Why don't we try 69, and then we'll see how we feel.
I can go 1 degree lower.
Yes, you can.
Yes!
There we go.
All right, we're going 1 degree lower coming up.
I'll be shivering in the corner. But...
Well, that's why I'm asking you.
I feel like that's a good place for us to be.
69?
That's a good place for us to be.
All right, coming up. I don't know if people realize this, but there is an NFL team that we've talked about a bunch, that, mm-hmm, we've been very critical of a certain quarterback, and we started to like a little bit when that quarterback had to do less. He may have to do more now. We'll get to that coming up. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
This is the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. Evan Canty and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
Touchdown, Josh Allen!
If you look at the prototype in terms of size, arm, mobility.
He said he was going to be a star, and he is. They built their franchise around him.
Looking for Allen!
I like winning. Whatever I'm asked to do, I'm willing to do.
Josh Allen, certainly a polarizing figure for us during the NFL season this year. Unsportsmanlike is presented by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com for more. So the league year starts next week. The Buffalo Bills were significantly over the salary cap number, and they cut approximately $26 million worth of cap space yesterday, including defensive backs Jordan Poyer, Trey White, offensive lineman Mitch Morse. They restructured Von Miller's contract. They did other moves as well with other players. And I was thinking back to our conversations last year, guys, about Josh Allen. And we all said, you know what? If they just have him do a little bit less and not try to hit home runs and maybe some singles and doubles, what could happen? They started to do that when Joe Brady took over as offensive coordinator. But now, we have a little bit of a problem, right? How do you do less when you have less on your team? Did we not really fully discuss enough that they actually went all in last year and didn't actually produce anything? Did they go more all in, I guess, is what I'm asking, than we discussed?
I think we said it was championship or bust for Buffalo.
Like, right.
We said that was the kind of urgency that the franchise was operating with. And remember, we talked about that when they fired offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey. So, yeah. I mean, they showed that level of urgency in the middle of the season when things weren't going according to plan. So I'm not going to say that we didn't put the proper expectations on them relative to what they have shown us, right? They were making, win-now moves. Remember, they went out and paid Von Miller after he won that chip with the L.A. Rams. Mm-hmm. They gave him a $140 million contract.
Right.
And he was, in his 30s. So, I mean, when you're doing that for pass rushers, you're showing us that you want to win a championship now. So I think we had that in its proper perspective. I guess now, what is the identity of the Buffalo Bills? It has to be Josh Allen-centric. And I'm not saying that means Josh Allen throwing the ball 35, 40 times, but it's going to be on the offensive side of the ball, and everything is going to be done to serve him so he's at his best. So I think the running game that we saw late in the regular season and in the postseason, especially against the Kansas City Chiefs, it will be more like that. Mm-hmm. But I think that has to be what they're doing offensively. Because think about it. You're moving on from all of these pieces on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, the best way to play defense when you have a lot of young, inexperienced players on that side of the ball is by not allowing the other team's offense to have the ball, which is running the football, controlling time of possession, mm-hmm. controlling the complexion of the game. I think that has to be stylistically what the Buffalo Bills lean into if they want to try to compete for a championship in 2024.
How open do we think their window is to win? I was thinking about this last night because you're right. They did operate with a certain sense of urgency last season. When you make moves like that, firing your offensive coordinator in season, you know that you have a finite amount of time to get it done. So you're not going to wait and see how things shake out. You know that you have to act immediately. So they were telling us that they know the runway is getting shorter for them to win a championship. But now that you're removing all these pieces from the team and you're that much more reliant on Josh Allen to be the good version of Josh Allen and not the bad version of Josh Allen, how open do we actually think their window is to win a Super Bowl?
So I'll answer your question with a question. Your favorite non-Mahomes quarterback in the NFL is Joe Burrow.
Correct.
And you always say about Joe Burrow, which is what he said, the window for my team is my career. The question I have in return to answer your question is, do you believe the window for the Buffalo Bills is Josh Allen's career?
Yes and no. Like, I have full confidence that he is a guy that can win you a Super Bowl. I have watched him have great playoff performances, go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs and be very close to beating them. And part of me says, if you're really that guy, then you should be able to overcome that. You should be able to prevail. But the other part of me says, this is somebody that we're talking about as the GOAT in waiting. We're talking about a dynastic team. Nobody's beating them. So I also don't want to be too hard on Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills for not being able to reach that point in the season. But I think he's going to put you in a position to win games. I don't know if he alone can be the reason why you win the same way we look at Patrick Mahomes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the window is his career.
You do?
Yeah, I think it's his career. Right now, the Buffalo Bills are the landlords of the AFC East, and I don't see anybody fading them anytime soon. I don't see anybody coming
even
close.
After yesterday with all the moves.
Even after yesterday. Who are you going to put your faith in, Tua?
No, that's
especially
the thing.
After they
I don't have a ton of faith in any of that.
Do you trust
division.
The New England Patriots?
No,
do you
I do
trust
not.
The Rodgers and the New York Jets? Hell
no.
No,
I do not.
So, yeah, Josh, like they're going to own the AFC East once again. What is it, four straight division titles, whatever it is?
Basically, ever since Brady retired.
Yeah, like they win
I'm
the
sorry,
division.
Not retired.
They,
went to Tampa.
They win the division every single year. So, as long as they have Josh Allen, who represents the best quarterback in the AFC East by far, then, yeah, why would I think that they're not capable of competing for championships? If you punch a ticket to the dance every single year, then you're going to have a chance that your window is open, and I believe that will be the case for Buffalo for the foreseeable future. Now, the rub comes with the cap hit for Josh Allen because it goes up almost triple what it was last year. Last year, he had a cap hit of $18.5 million. This year, it goes up to $47 million. So, I mean,
which is high, but not as absurd as some of the other guys out there.
It's not, but you're seeing the ramifications of that with the other veteran players that are on that team, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. And so I think that's why you're seeing this organization, Brandon Beane and Sean McDermott, retool that side of the ball because, you know, if you've got to take resources from your cap away from an area of your team to service your quarterback, that would be the area that you would think to do it, especially knowing that you have a defensive-minded head coach. Sean McDermott, from an X's and O's standpoint, is going to have to help that young unit overcome some of the talent deficiencies based on what they did yesterday that we're projecting them to have.
I'm not 100% on board with the window is Josh Allen's career. Like, I think there are some guys, when you look at that conversation, Mahomes, obviously, I'll lean into Burrow since he said it. This is ridiculous what I'm about to say, but C.J. Stroud feels like the kind of guy that the window is his career. I know it's 1 year. It's probably an overreaction, but he just made so many people so much better in the first year. Think about what he's going to do when he actually knows what he's doing.
I would say it's an overreaction only if I didn't know how much of a dumpster fire the Houston Texans were before he
got
there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like,
you know what I'm saying? So it's not just that he had a really good rookie season. It's what he walked into and how he was capable of producing, knowing the dysfunction that was behind the scenes.
And he does what I always say you need to do if you're a great quarterback is lift the receivers. He didn't, like, you know, Eagles fans look at Jalen Hurts, and he's awesome, but he's awesome when they had awesome people around him.
He got much better when they got A.J. Brown. He became an MVP caliber quarterback.
Tua, we've talked about as well, right? Like, C.J. Stroud made guys that...
Collins, baby.
Yeah, the masses never really heard of into great players. But anyway...
Nico Collins had 1,300 yards receiving last year.
Wow. And look at Tank Dell.
1,300 yards receiving, 8 touchdowns. I mean, this is wild.
With Josh Allen, the turnovers are such a turnoff for me that I would be a little bit hesitant this year if I'm a Bills fan because I would look back after what I saw yesterday and all of the players they released. And it's not like they're not going to bring in good players. I know they are. It's not like skill position guys aren't going to want to go there because they know how good Josh Allen is. This is not a debate whether or not he's good. It's a debate whether or not we overrate his greatness, right? Mm-hmm. I just get nervous. Josh, hey, you know, we're going to let up 3 more points per game this year. 4 more points per game. We're going to need you to help us with that. That would scare me. That would scare me because when he has to do too much, he turns the ball over. Now, if you tell me what you said about the running game, and we're going to now hear them in the Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley as a pairing with James Cook, then I'm going to think differently.
Yeah, I mean, they ran the ball 39 times against the Kansas City Chiefs. So in a game where it was literally win or go home, that's what they decided they wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And they came close. They had a chance at the end. They
Super
really
close.
Did. So, I mean, like, I think that has to be who they are moving forward, especially while they're figuring things out early on in the 2024 season on the defensive side of the ball because they're going to have a lot of new faces and new roles. And I think Sean McDermott will do that. He's got a high enough football acumen where they could overcome whatever talent deficiencies they have on that side of the ball. But still, with so much newness, you're going to have to be more reliant on the offensive side of the ball, and that means more reliant on Josh Allen to play winning football.
All right, coming up. I think somehow we're already hypothetically going to the place of what if Caleb Williams is not good? Boy, the Bears, it's only the Bears, I feel like. Well, it's not only the Bears, the Jets, maybe the Browns, other teams that, like, just we assume guys are not going to be as good on historically. But, yeah, people have already gone to the place of the blame game if Caleb Williams is not good. We will get to that. But first, we're talking about Buffalo. People using Vivid Seats to go to Buffalo Bills games, they're having a fun time. But you can use Vivid Seats to get everywhere, CC.
Absolutely, especially if you're a Bears fan and they draft Caleb Williams, you're going to want your seats. And that's why you go to Vivid Seats. Secure the seats and the memories with Vivid Seats this year. Your home for every dunk, Every slap shot, every stolen base, Vivid Seats celebrates fandom with unbeatable rewards like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. With Vivid Seats rewards, you earn with every purchase from buzzer beaters to walk-off home runs. Vivid Seats has a great selection and great prices on all the games that matter to you. Just visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, official ticketing partner of ESPN.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Here's what's amazing about what's happening with the draft conversation. We have gone from
not
who's
the
going.
Family.
Well,
not
oh, just
the,
wait.
Not
just
the family.
Wait. Not the kids kicked out of school.
Just wait. So we've gone from who's going to get drafted number one to what happens if he doesn't do well. Which is, I mean, we're already projecting Caleb Williams to potentially. Well, hold on, Smalls. Listen to this.
Okay.
Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst, was on Get Up, 8 a.m. Eastern with Greeny. And, talked about Caleb Williams.
I'm going to bring up three names right now. I mean this from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with Lamar Jackson. Once he's drafted amongst quarterbacks that are in the NFL, Lamar Jackson is going to be the only one that scares you more with his legs.
Ooh.
That can move the pocket the way he can.
Really?
That can be elusive in the backfield the way he can. Now, I'm going to bring up two other names. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Immediately upon being drafted, when we're talking about arm talent, when we're talking about off-platform throws, when we're talking about being able to put the football anywhere you want to put it on the field, that's the tier he's on. Now, you tell me this. If you see a dude and those are the people you're comparing him to, you're going to say, we're going to draft him first overall because of all of those reasons. But you know what, dog? Don't trip. Sit down. I wish you would. You do that, that's going to be malpractice. You should be fired. Your wife should never get a job. And your kid should be kicked out of school.
Okay, so Ryan also said that it's somewhat on the coach and the organization.
No, not somewhat.
It's on the coach and the organization
mm-hmm.
if Caleb Williams fails. So can I ask a question? And maybe this is dumb. Is the inverse then true? If Caleb Williams succeeds, am I supposed to give the organization all the credit if I'm going to give them all the blame if he doesn't succeed?
No, I think we're going to give him the credit just the same way we give C.J. Stroud the credit for overcoming the Houston Texans and the circumstances that were the Houston Texans mm-hmm. prior to that. But I'm not surprised by this at all. Why wouldn't we be questioning whether or not the Chicago Bears would ruin Caleb Williams? It's been a quarterback wasteland for years. They have ruined many a great college quarterback. So why wouldn't I be concerned that Caleb Williams would somehow go down that same path, even though everything we've seen out of him in college points to the fact that he should be a transformational franchise quarterback? I just don't have any confidence in the Chicago Bears that they're going to be able to change who they are, despite Caleb Williams being a great talent.
Yeah, I mean, if we're asking the question about Caleb Williams and if he doesn't succeed, who to blame, I think I would probably lean toward the Chicago Bears more so than I would lean toward it being Caleb Williams' fault. But the problem with framing it the way that RC framed it is that it doesn't leave any room for it to be the player's fault. Mm-hmm. Like to say that if the player doesn't have success, it's all on the organization, I reject that premise because the player is the one that's actually out there on the field.
Right.
Like at some point, there's got to be some level of accountability with him, even when it comes to the Justin Fields of it all. I will give Fields the benefit of the doubt, but he is responsible in part for it not working out in Chicago. They did invest the 11th overall pick in him once upon a time to play quarterback. They traded a future first-round pick to the New York Giants for the rights to move up to take him. So they had a vested interest in his success. They may not know what the hell they're doing, but they wanted him to succeed. At some point, it's got to be on the player as well. Like he has to have some onus in all of this. The player has to have some agency, and that's why I don't want to frame this conversation around the Chicago Bears taking Caleb Williams and the lack of success that he could potentially have and say it's just on the organization.
Because we wouldn't do it the opposite way. We're not going to give the organization credit for his success. But that makes it seem like he's a can't miss. Like that's Andrew Luck level of prospect.
I mean, Ryan Clark just said he's Lamar with his legs and Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes with his arm.
So he has to be the best quarterback in the NFL the moment Mahomes retires. Based on what Ryan Clark just said?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I'm asking. Is that kind of what he's saying there?
That could be what he's saying, but here's the thing. Like, let's keep it in perspective. Like, Patrick Mahomes didn't start right away. Lamar Jackson didn't start right away. Nope. It was Joe Flacco. I mean, even with Josh Allen, I'm not sure if he was the week one starter. He did play the majority of games his rookie year, but he wasn't the guy that we know now. So this thing takes some time in order for these guys to develop. But when we do these comparisons, we set these lofty expectations, these lofty standards that become impossible for the player to live up to. And I think that's the part where we've got to temper our expectations on what we think Caleb Williams will be right out of the gate. I get the appetite for it because this is a quarterback-starved fan base. This franchise is still holding on to the memories of Sid Luckman. I get that we all want him to be successful going to Chicago. I just don't think it's going to happen early on or as early as people might expect it to.
So Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback, ESPN analyst, was on with the Dan Patrick Show in studio with Dan and Paulie and Fritz and everybody there. Marvin, shout out Seton, everybody.
Shout out to Marvin Prince. And
he gave some advice to Caleb Williams and the Bears.
You better be under the understanding that you're going to sit him this year, and that's not going to happen.
Why would you sit him?
Well, because 75% of what he made him so great in college is not transferable to the NFL. He's not going to be able to do that. He can't do what he did in college 75% of the time and be successful at the NFL level. He can do the 25% part at the NFL level, but he needs some time. He needs to get under center. He needs to understand how to throw on time, on platform, from the pocket. What he can do off platform is what makes him so exciting, because he may be one of the most talented quarterbacks in this year's draft and in many in the past year's draft. But he is a guy that I don't think can be a starter on day one.
I hear that, and I don't find any of that insulting towards Caleb Williams, and I think some people may. I wish that we lived in a football world where it was almost a forced redshirt season for some of these quarterbacks.
Oh, see, you're taking too far with me. You're
taking it too far. So
I was with you with what you were saying about Ryan Leaf. I'm there with what Ryan Leaf is saying.
It's hard.
But I don't think it has to be a forced redshirt.
Okay,
year.
So let me ease up on that then,
yeah,
right?
Because
I don't need to bicker about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I will do it this way. I wish it was more accepted that if you're drafted number one, it is not automatic that you start day one.
Yes.
That you start when you're ready to then start for 10 years straight. If you're not ready to start on day one for 10 years straight, just wait. But it's not accepted. It stinks. It should be accepted.
Yeah, because you can do irreparable harm to the quarterback in terms of his overall development. If you don't believe me, all you got to do is ask my former teammate, David Carr. Mm. And people right now just know him as Derek's brother. But I remember when David Carr was supposed to be the savior for the Houston Texans franchise, their first pick in the first round, and he was number one overall when it was an expansion franchise. He got sacked 76 times. The organization allowed the career to get knocked out of him. So I think it's important that we play these players, not just when they're ready, but also when the supporting cast is ready to support that player properly.
Yes.
And I don't know that the Chicago Bears offense is going to be there. I'm not saying that they won't be there, because there's still a lot of offseason left. There's still a lot that can be done. But to Ryan Leaf's point, 75% of the stuff that we saw Caleb Williams do at USC, he ain't going to be able to do. Like, he's going to have to win from the pocket more often than not. That's not what we saw at USC. It was the second reaction plays, the improvisation, and there is a time and place for that in the NFL. But if you try to make a living doing that in the NFL, down in, down out, with every single drop back, let me tell you something, you ain't going to make it through your rookie year. It ain't going to happen. Mm. So, I mean, the stuff that does transfer, the traits, his ability to be able to shape throws, his ability to be able to layer throws, the off-platform throws, whether he's in the pocket or outside of the pocket, those are things that are dominant traits that translate well to the NFL, because you're going to have to do that with tighter windows. But this business about getting outside of the pocket and running around all the other places and playing backyard football, nah, dog, not a 6'1", 215, you ain't going to make it doing that. Like, even Lamar Jackson, contrary to popular opinion, makes his living winning from the pocket. That's what he does. Now, the SportsCenter highlight plays are the ones where he's getting outside of the pocket using his legs, but that's the outlier. That's in the minority in comparison to what we see him do on your typical pass play. And the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. It's the same thing with Josh Allen. Like, those guys had to learn that there are things that I could get away with in college that I just can't in the NFL. And so I think that's the part where sitting him makes a lot of sense, so he can see the difference in the game. Because even though it's still called football, it is a different world, what we see on Sundays versus what we see on Saturdays.
So we're talking about how sitting him is a good idea and how it might take some time for him to calibrate in the NFL and adjust his skill set to what the NFL requires. We're talking about making sure that the right players are around him for him to have success, that the scheme is going to match up for him. All of these things that need to be in alignment for Caleb Williams to have success at the NFL level. Do we have confidence that the Chicago Bears are going to do this?
No.
Do we have confidence that the Chicago Bears aren't going to jump the gun and that they're not going to wait and they're not going to – or that – do we have confidence that they're going to do this the right way? Because I do not.
Yeah, I have zero confidence in Chicago Bears, and that's why I have a problem talking about this thing in absolutes. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with saying absolutely if he fails, it's the Chicago Bears' fault. I have a problem in saying that absolutely he should be the week one starter. Like, these absolutes that we get into – I think we got to walk them back a little bit, because it is a very, very high-stakes situation, and the Chicago Bears can't afford to be wrong. They've got to get this one right, and that's why I don't think this year should be based on what's in the best interest of the Chicago Bears as much as it should be based on what's in the interest, best interest of the development of Caleb Williams. And that might not necessarily mean him being the week one starter. Not saying that it's off the table,
right,
but I'm not saying it absolutely has to be the case either.
Real quick, before we go, the reason I don't have confidence in them not only is just the history, they don't even have stability at the head coaching position right now. So that's kind of thing number one that you need for your rookie quarterback to come in, have a coach that he knows he's going to be able to grow with, an offensive coordinator you know you're going to be able to grow with. They haven't even done that. So why do I think that they're going to do all of these other things required for Caleb Williams to succeed?
We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We have a lot of free agents. We have a lot of matchmaking we need to do. Can I just ask one quick question? With the Bears, I've been thinking about something. Would you guys then say, right now, if you're the Chicago Bears, if you were running the team, sign a quarterback that is capable of starting for the first, let's call it 2 to 3 games, that will not create a quarterback controversy at any point. Meaning you can't just say, oh, start Justin Fields. That's a quarterback controversy. You can't even say start, you know, bring in Gardner Minshew because he won games last year. Bringing in someone that is capable to start and capable to bench. Is that the suggestion you guys would make?
Are you suggesting, like, who is that person? Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill is exactly who I was thinking of. Would you, if you're the Bears, maybe sit on that. We can revisit that. But just, I want to kind of throw that out there because everything that just happened in the previous 10 minutes leads me to think that maybe that is actually exactly what they should do. Because then the two of you that are fairly questioning the Bears as an organization may sit back and say, oh, all right, they have a plan here. They're not going to throw that guy out there to get his butt kicked in the game one of an NFL season.
Yeah.
There's no requirement for them to play him game one. There's a requirement for them to pay him game one.
Yeah, you always want the fan base clamoring for the star quarterback that you took with the number one overall pick. You never want the star quarterback to be in a position where the fan base is asking to see the backup because they don't think he got it.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
The danger that you run with making him the week one starter before he's ready and or before the supporting cast is ready to assist him properly. So I guess that's the part where it makes sense for a Ryan Tannehill to come in and take the slings and arrows, the early lumps that you might, knowing that you're overhauling your offense. It's going to be a new offensive system because you turned over your offensive coordinator position. Like you would rather Ryan Tannehill workshop all of the kinks in the offense before you turn it over to Caleb Williams. You know, I just think that it's practical from the standpoint of making sure that you don't do anything that can ruin your young quarterback.
Yes.
You don't put him in a position where he develops bad habits that are hard to break. You allow him to sit back and see how a professional quarterback goes about his business. I like Ryan Tannehill. I'll see you, Ryan Tannehill, and raise you a Gardner Minshew.
Because you don't think that's a quarterback controversy a little
no,
bit?
No, why? Gardner Minshew is a career backup. Right, at least Ryan Tannehill was once upon a time the starter in a franchise quarterback for a team. Mm-hmm. That ain't never been Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, I think
ever.
He should be, but
no, well, you can say you think he should be, but I mean Gardner Minshew is a career backup. Like that's just what it is. So I mean, bringing somebody in there that can be like an extra set of eyes for him once Caleb Williams is installed as the starting quarterback. That makes sense to me.
Yep,
it was the same plan that the Indianapolis Colts had. They just didn't think Anthony Richardson would get hurt, but
exactly.
We know Gardner Minshew can do that role.
Totally.
And when you have to call on him to play, he can do a good job. He's a competent quarterback, but he's never going to be a guy that threatens Caleb Williams' status as QB1.
All right, here we go. Free agency matchmaker, all right? I'm going to give you a name. You tell me where this guy is going to end up. This could also change in an hour. Here we go. Kirk Cousins.
Oh, the Atlanta Falcons need to swipe right. Like that to me is tailor-made. Like they got to go with this dude. Like they have all the ingredients. You got Drake London. You got Kyle Pitts. You got Bijan Robinson. You have a defense that's flirting with being a top 10 unit. The Atlanta Falcons make all the sense in the world.
I'm with you. I wanted him to stay with Minnesota, but it seems like the further and further we're getting away from that, he's going towards Atlanta. I say the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, I agree. That's what I had. Baker Mayfield.
I think he needs to stay in Tampa Bay. I think that's the best spot for him, and it seems like things are trending that way.
That's where I head.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield, top 10 in passing yards and passing touchdowns. He wanted to play with Mike Evans. I understand why Mike Evans is a 1,000-yard receiver from the moment that training camp starts. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Also, you were resurgent last year. Like, why disrupt what worked for you?
Fair. All right, next one. Free agency matchmaker, Saquon Barkley.
Ooh, this is spicy. This is spicy. I like Saquon Barkley as a satellite running back. They seem to love that with the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Saquon Barkley with the Dallas Cowboys makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know whether or not they'll be able to make the math work, the numbers work. They have other pressing needs. But Saquon Barkley with the Dallas Cowboys, a guy that you can move all around the formation, that has the threat to be a home run hitter from anywhere on the field, adding another explosive element to your offense that already has CeeDee Lamb, I think that would be great for Dak Prescott.
I would love to put Saquon Barkley with the Chicago Bears. I would love to give Caleb Williams, whenever he does start, as many weapons as possible. Plus, Saquon has been the face of a franchise, and he could, I think, mentor Caleb Williams, different position, obviously. But in how to do that, I think he would be great with the Bears.
I put him with the Raiders. For some reason, I could see him going there. Antonio Pierce, Giants connection, maybe likes him. And then Josh Jacobs potentially walks. Put him with the Raiders. All right, next one. Russell Wilson.
Minnesota Vikings.
That's what I had.
Minnesota Vikings. I mean, with Kirk Cousins walking out of the door, I think they pivot. I'm not sure they'll be able to get up in the draft to get the kind of quarterback that they're looking for. So I think Russell Wilson ends up being a bridge quarterback to whatever is the next thing. Again, I think a lot of teams are going to look at Russell Wilson as something to do when there's nothing to do, which is why they're waiting on the other dominoes in the veteran quarterback market to fall. So I think Minnesota ends up being a team without a chair. When the music stops, they settle for Russell Wilson.
So I had the Vikings too, but then I crossed it out and put another team with a question mark next to it.
Okay.
What about the New England Patriots?
I'd love it.
It feels like they're done with Mac Jones. It feels like they're going to take a quarterback top three. Everything we talked about with making sure that quarterback is ready to go and not rushing the process, why not bring in a cheap option and Russell Wilson and let him take the slings and arrows, be that starting quarterback until whoever they select at number three is ready to go?
Love it. I would sign up right now. Russell Wilson at $1.2 million. You draft May or Daniels at whoever's left at three. Good to go. Totally good to go on that. No problem with that whatsoever. All right, next one. Derrick Henry. Where is he next year? Musical chairs, matchmaker here with the free agents.
Baltimore Ravens.
Ooh, love that.
It's just a great love fit. That. It's a great fit. This organization prides itself on going after guys that are at the end of the prime of their career, but they still can get productivity out of them. I like Derrick Henry being that physical element to that Baltimore Ravens offense that really doesn't have one. Like, when we think about the Baltimore Ravens, we think about physicality, yet they didn't play that way against the Kansas City Chiefs. They got bullied in the trenches on both sides of the ball in that AFC title game, and I think Derrick Henry changes that for Baltimore. Like, being able to be that hammer for that offense with Lamar Jackson, it just makes them so much more dynamic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a scary thought of adding him to the Baltimore Ravens. Two teams for me with Derrick Henry. I would love to see him go to the Raiders. And what about the Houston Texans, giving C.J. Stroud yet another weapon to work with? I would love to see him go to Houston.
I put the Chargers. I got to put a big bruising running back. You shot me down on Saquon because you said not that Saquon's not great and not that the Chargers scheme wouldn't be great. It's those two don't necessarily fit together. And you got in my head, they need an every down pounding back, not a satellite move back. Derrick Henry's that.
Yep.
Derrick Henry in a Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman system with Justin Herbert. That's where I went. Last one. Now, maybe our conversation has now changed us a little bit mindset wise. Ryan Tannehill.
You know, I really crossed off a lot of teams with this one, and I wanted to take a gamble. What about the New York Jets? They need a non-threatening backup.
That's an interesting idea. I like that. That's
you know what I mean?
Idea. Yeah.
Because Rodgers may not work out. They're going to need somebody there.
Yeah.
He's not going to be threatened by Ryan Tannehill.
No, he's not going to be threatened. I would go with the Indianapolis Colts, Anthony Richardson. I don't think Gardner Minshew's coming back. I think Ryan Tannehill slots in perfectly.
I put him back in Tennessee, but now I want to put him in Chicago. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.